Star Wars, The Last Command by Timothy Zahn, continued. Cassette number 9, side 2. Quiet, Wedge muttered back. Intelligence has located 3 of them, Medine continued. All in Imperial-held space, naturally. The simplest one to go after is at Tangreen, helping to guard the new Ubiquitorate base they're putting together there. Lots of cargo and construction ships moving around, but relatively few combat ships. We've managed to insert some of our people into the cargo crews, and they report the place is ripe for the taking. Sounds a lot like Endor, someone commented from the bench across from Wedge. How can we be sure it isn't a trap? Actually, we're pretty sure it is, Medine said with a tight smile. That's why we're going here instead. He touched a switch. The holoprojector rose from the center of the table, and a schematic appeared in the air above it. The Imperial Shipyards at Bilbringi, he identified it. And I know what you're all saying to yourselves. It's big, it's well defended, and what in the galaxy is the High Command thinking about? The answer is simple. It's big, it's well defended, and it's the last place the Imperials will expect us to hit. Moreover, if we succeed, we will have severely damaged their shipbuilding capability, Akbar added, as well as putting to rest the growing belief in Grand Admiral Thrawn's infallibility. Which assumed, of course, that Thrawn was fallible. Wedge thought about pointing that out, decided against it. Everyone here was probably already thinking it anyway. The operation will consist of 2 parts, Medine went on. We certainly don't want to disappoint the Imperials planning the trap for us at Tangreen, so Colonel Darlin will be in charge of creating the illusion that that system is indeed our target. While he does that, Admiral Akbar and I will be organizing the actual attack on Bilbringi. Any questions? There was a moment of silence. Then Pash raised his hand. What happens if the Imperials pick up on the Bilbringi attack and miss the Tangreen preparations entirely? Medine smiled thinly. We'd be most disappointed in them. All right, gentlemen, we have an assault force to organize. Let's get started. The bedroom was dark and warm and quiet, murmuring with the faint nighttime noises of the Imperial City outside the windows, and the more subtle sounds of the sleeping infants across the room. Listening to the sounds, inhaling the familiar aromas of home, Leia stared at the ceiling and wondered what had awakened her. "Do you require anything, Lady Vader?" A soft, nogri voice came from the shadows beside the door. "No, Moff Bekar, thank you," Leia said. She hadn't made any noise. He must have picked up on the change in her breathing pattern. "I'm sorry. I didn't mean to disturb you."
"You did not," the Nogri assured her. "Are you troubled?"
"I don't know," she said. It was starting to come back now. "I had not a dream exactly, more like a subconscious flash of insight, a piece of a puzzle trying to fit into place."
"Do you know which piece?"
Leia shook her head. "I don't even know which puzzle."
"Did it relate to the siege of stones in the sky above?" Movekar asked. "Or with the mission of your consort and the son of Vader?"
"I'm not sure," Leia said, frowning with concentration into the darkness and running through the short-term memory enhancement techniques Luke had taught her. Slowly, the half-remembered dream images started to sharpen. "It was something Luke said. No, it was something Mara said. Something Luke did. They fit together somehow. I don't know how, but I know it's important."
"Then you will find the answer," Moff Bekar said firmly. You are the Lady Vader, the Baal-Ari-Ush of the Lord Vader. You will succeed at whatever goal you set for yourself.
Leia smiled in the darkness. It wasn't just words. Moff Bekar and the other Nogri truly believed that. Thank you, she said, taking a deep breath and feeling a renewing of her own spirit. Yes, she would succeed, if for no other reason than to justify the trust that the Nogri people had placed in her. Across the room, she could sense the restlessness and growing hunger that meant the twins would be waking up soon. Reaching past the lightsaber half hidden beneath her pillow, she pulled her robe over to her. Whatever this important puzzle piece was she'd stumbled on, it would wait until morning. Chapter 20. The last surviving rebel ship flickered with pseudo-motion and vanished into hyperspace. And after a 30-hour battle, the heart of Kanchen Sector was finally theirs.
Secure the fleet from full battle status, Captain, Thrawn ordered, his voice grimly satisfied as he stood at the side viewport. Deploy for planetary bombardment, and have Captain Harbid transmit our terms of surrender to the Zafel government.
Yes, sir, Pelion said, keying in the order. Thrawn half turned to face him.
And send a further message to all ships, he added. Well done.
Pelion smiled. Yes, the Grand Admiral did indeed know how to lead his men.
Yes, sir, he said, and transmitted the message.
On his board, a light went on. A pre-flagged message had just come through decrypt. He pulled it up, skimmed through it.
A report from Tangreen, Thrawn asked, still gazing out at the helpless world lying below them.
Yes, sir, Pelion nodded. The rebels have sent two more freighters into the system. Long-range scans suggest that they offloaded something in the outer system on the way in, but intelligence has so far been unable to locate or identify the drops.
Instruct them not to try, Thrawn said. We don't want our prey frightened off.
Pelion nodded, marveling once again at the Grand Admiral's ability to read his opponents. Up until 20 hours ago, he would have sworn the rebels wouldn't be audacious enough to commit this many forces to a battle just to get hold of a CGT array. Apparently, they were. We're also getting reports of rebel ships drifting quietly into the Tangreen area, he added, skimming down the report again. Warships, starfighters, support craft, the whole range.
Good, Thrawn said.
But there was something preoccupied and troubled about the way he clasped his hands behind his back. A message appeared on Pelion's board. The Zafel government had accepted Harbid's terms. Word from the Death's Head, Admiral, he said. Zafel has surrendered.
Not unexpectedly, Thrawn said. Inform Captain Harbid that he will handle the landings and troop deployments. You, Captain, will reconfigure the fleet into defensive formation until planetary defenses have been secured.
Yes, sir. Pelion frowned at the Grand Admiral's back. Is anything wrong, Admiral?
I don't know, Thrawn said slowly. I'll be in my private command room, Captain. Join me there in 1 hour.
He turned and favored Pelion with a tight smile.
Perhaps by then I'll have an answer to that question.
Gillespie finished reading and handed the datapad across the table to Mazik. You never cease to amaze me, Carta, he said, his voice just loud enough to be heard over the Tap Cafe's background noise. Where in space do you dig this stuff up from, anyway?
Around, Carta said, waving his hand vaguely. Just around.
That doesn't tell me Minox spit, Gillespie complained.
I don't think it was meant to, Mazik said dryly, handing the data pad back to Carda. I agree, it's very interesting. The question is whether we can believe it.
The information itself is reliable, Carda said. My interpretation of it, of course, is certainly open to question.
Mazik shook his head. I don't know. It seems like a pretty desperate move to me.
I wouldn't say desperate, Carda disagreed. Call it instead a return to the bold tactics the Rebel Alliance used to be known for. Personally, I think a move like this is long overdue. They've allowed themselves to be put on the defensive far longer than they should have.
That doesn't change the fact that if this doesn't work, they're going to lose a lot of ships, Mazik pointed out. Up to 2 entire sector fleets, if you can believe these numbers.
True, Carda agreed. But if it does work, they get a major victory against Thrawn and an equally major lift in morale, not to mention a CGT array.
Yeah, that's another thing, Gillespie put in. What do they need a CGT for anyway?
It supposedly has something to do with the reason Coruscant has been closed to civilian traffic for the past few days, Carda said. That's all I know.
Mazik leaned back in his seat and fixed Carda with a speculative look. Forget what they need it for. What are you proposing we do about it?
Carda shrugged. It looks to me like the New Republic is fairly desperate to get their hands on a CGT. If they're willing to fight for one, I assume they'd be even more willing to pay for one.
Seems reasonable, Mazik agreed. So, what do you want us to do? Sneak into Tangreen before they get there?
Not really. Carda shook his head. I thought that while everyone was busy fighting at Tangreen, we'd pick up the CGT at Bilbringi.
Mazik's smile vanished. You're joking.
Not a bad idea, really, Gillespie put in, slowly swirling the remains of the drink in his cup. We slip in before the attack starts, then grab the CGT and run.
Through half the Imperial fleet, Mazik countered. Come on, I've seen the kind of firepower they keep there.
I doubt they'll have more than a skeleton defense there. Carda raised an eyebrow. Unless you seriously think Thrawn won't anticipate and prepare for the New Republic's move on Tangreen.
Point, Mazik conceded. They can't afford to let the New Republic have a victory there, can they?
Particularly not at Tangreen, Carda nodded. That's where General Belibles successfully hit them once before.
Mazik grunted and pulled the data pad over in front of him again. Carda let him reread the information and analysis, giving the Tap Cafe a leisurely scan as he waited. Near the main entrance, Avis and Gillespie's Lieutenant Fawn were sitting together at one of the tables, doing a good job of looking inconspicuous. Across the way at the rear entrance, Mazik's bodyguard Shada was playing the flirtatious hostess role for Dankin and Torve. The whole routine being convincingly leered at by Rapaport and O'Shea, two more of Gillespie's people. Three more tables of backup forces were scattered elsewhere throughout the Tap Cafe, primed and ready. This time, none of them were taking any chances with Imperial interference.
It won't be easy, Mazik warned at last. Thrawn was furious about that raid we pulled. They've probably redone their whole security setup by now.
All the better, Carda said. They won't have found the holes in it yet. Are you in or out?
Mazik looked down at the data pad. I might be in, he growled, but only if you can get a confirmation on the time of this Tangreen thing. I don't want Thrawn anywhere within 100 light-years of Bilbringi when we hit the place.
That shouldn't be a problem, Carda said. We know the systems where the New Republic is assembling their forces.
I'll send some of my people to poke around and see what they can turn up.
What if they can't get anything?
Carda smiled. I need to have Ghent write us onto their payroll anyway, he pointed out. As long as he's in the system, he might as well check on their battle plans, too. For a moment, Mazik just stared at him. Then, suddenly, the frown vanished, and he actually chuckled.
You know, Carda, I've never seen anyone play both ends against the middle the way you do. Okay, I'm in.
Glad to have you, Carda nodded. Gillespie?
I've already seen Thrawn's clones in action, Gillespie reminded him grimly. You bet I'm in. Besides, if we win, maybe I can get that land back the Empire stole from me on Ukiyo.
I'll put in a good word for you with the New Republic, Carda promised. All right, then. I'm taking the wild Carda to Coruscant, but I'll be leaving Avis behind to coordinate my part of the attack group. He'll give you the operations plan when you check in.
Sounds good, Mazik said, as they all got to their feet. You know, Carda, I just hope I'm around to see the day the New Republic catches up with you. Whether they give you a medal or just shoot you, either way, it'll be a terrific show.
Carda smiled at him. I rather hope to be there that day myself, he said. Good flights, gentlemen. I'll see you at Bilbringi. The brilliant green turbolaser blast flashed downward from the fuzzy-looking Star Destroyer in the distance beyond. It splashed slightly against the unseen energy shield, then reappeared a short distance away, continuing onward.
Stop, Admiral Drayson said.
The record froze, the hazy splash of turbolaser fire looking angular and rather artificial as it sat there in stop-frame mode on the main display. I apologize for the quality here, Drayson said, stepping over to tap it with his light pointer. Macrobinocular records can be enhanced only so much before the algorithms start breaking down. But even so, I think you can all see what's happening. The Star Destroyer's blast is not, in fact, penetrating Ukiyo's planetary shield. What appears to be that same blast is actually a second shot fired from a cloaked vessel inside the shield. Leia peered at the hazy picture. It didn't seem nearly that obvious to her.
Are you sure? She asked.
Quite sure, Drayson said, touching his light pointer to the empty space between the splash and the continuing green fire. We have spectral and energy line data on the beams themselves, but this gap by itself is really all the proof we need. That's the bulk of the second ship, most likely a Carrick-class light cruiser from the size. He lowered the light pointer and looked around the table. In other words, the Empire's new superweapon is nothing more than an extremely clever fraud. Leia thought about that meeting in Admiral Ackbar's rooms back when he was under suspicion of treason. Ackbar once warned Han and me that a Grand Admiral would find ways to use a cloaking shield against us.
I don't think you'd find anyone arguing that point, Drayson nodded. At any rate, this should put an end to this particular gambit. We'll put out an alert to all planetary forces that if the Empire tries it again, all they need to do is direct a saturation fire at the spot where the turbolaser blasts appear to penetrate the shield.
Fraud or not, it was still one highly impressive show, Bel Iblis commented. The position and timing were exquisitely handled. What do you think, Leia? That insane Jedi Luke locked horns with on Jomark?
I don't think there's any doubt, Leia said, a shiver running through her. We've already seen this kind of coordination between forces in Thrawn's earlier campaigns. And we know from Mara that Cabauth and Thrawn are working together.
Mentioning Mara's name was a mistake. There was a general uncomfortable shifting in seats around the table, as the emotional sense in the room chilled noticeably. They'd all heard Leia's reasoning for her unilateral decision to release Mara, and none of them had liked it. Belle Iblis broke the awkward silence first. Where did this macrobinocular record come from, Admiral? From that smuggler, Talon Karda, Grayson said. He threw a significant look at Leia. Another outsider who came here offering valuable information that didn't pan out. Leia bristled. That's not fair, she insisted. The fact we lost the Katana fleet wasn't Karda's fault. She looked at Counselor Phalia, sitting silently at the table, doing his private Bothan penance. If Phalia hadn't been making that insane bid for power... She looked back at Drayson. It was nobody's fault, she added quietly, releasing at last the final lingering dregs of resentment at Phalia and allowing them to drain away. The recognition of his failure was already paralyzing the Bothan. She couldn't allow long-dead anger to do the same to her. Belle Iblis cleared his throat. I think what Leia's trying to say is that without Karda's help, we might have lost more than just the Katana fleet. Whatever you think of smugglers in general, or Karda in particular, we owe him. Interesting that you should say that, General, Grayson said dryly. Karda seems to feel the same way. In exchange for this record and certain other minor items of intelligence, he's drawn rather liberally from a special New Republic credit line. He looked at Leia again. A line apparently set up by Counselor Organa Solo's brother. Commander Sesfan, Akbar's representative to the Council, rolled his huge Mon Calamari eyes toward Leia. Jedi Skywalker authorized payments to a smuggler, he said, his gravelly voice sounding astonished. He did, Drayson confirmed. Completely without authorization, of course. We'll close it off immediately. You'll do no such thing, Mon Mothma's quiet voice came from the head of the table. Whether Karda is officially on our side or not, he's clearly willing to help us. That makes him worthy of our support. But he is a smuggler, Sesfan objected. So was Han, Leia reminded him. So was Lando Calrissian once. Both of them became generals. After they joined us, Sesfan countered. Karda has made no such commitment. It doesn't matter, Mon Mothma said. Her voice was still quiet, but there was steel beneath it. We need all the allies we can get, official or otherwise. Unless he's setting us up, Drayson pointed out darkly. Gaining our trust with things like this macrobinocular record so that he can feed us disinformation later, and in the meantime, profiting rather handsomely from it. We'll simply have to make certain we spot any such duplicity, Mon Mothma told him. But I don't believe that will happen. Luke Skywalker is a Jedi, and he clearly has some trust in this man Karda. Regardless, for now, our focus should be on those parts of our destiny which are in our hands. Admiral Drayson, have you the latest report on the Bilbringi operation? Yes, Drayson nodded, pulling out a data card. He inserted it into the display slot, and as he did so, Leia heard the faint beep of a comlink from beside her. Winter pulled the device from her belt and acknowledged softly into it. Leia couldn't make out the reply, but she felt the sudden flicker in Winter's sense. Trouble? She murmured. If I may have everyone's attention, Drayson said, just a little too loudly. Leia returned back to him, feeling her face warm, as Winter pushed her chair back and slipped over to the door. Drayson threw a glare at her back, apparently decided it wasn't worth invoking the usual sealed room rule. The door slid open at Winter's touch, and an unseen person pressed a data card into her hand. The door slid shut again. Well, Drayson demanded, I trust this is something that couldn't wait.
I'm certain it could have, Winter said coolly, giving Drayson her full anti-bluster gaze as she returned to her seat and sat down.
For you, Your Highness, she said, handing Leia the data card. The coordinates of the planet Wayland.
A ripple of surprise went around the room as Leia took the card.
That was fast, Drayson said, his voice tinged with suspicion. I was under the impression this place was going to be a lot harder to find.
Leia shrugged, trying to suppress her own twinge of uneasiness. That had been her impression, too.
Apparently it wasn't.
Show it to us, Mon Mothma said. Leia slid the data card into the slot and keyed for a visual. A sector map appeared on the main display, with familiar names floating beside several of the stars. In the center, surrounded by a group of unlabeled stars, one of the systems flashed red. At the bottom of the map was a short list of planetary data and a few lines of text.
So that's the Emperor's Rat's Nest, Bel Iblis murmured, leaning forward as he studied it.
I always wondered where he hid all those interesting little tidbits that seemed to mysteriously vanish from official storehouses and depots.
If that's really the place, Drayson murmured.
I presume you can confirm the information came from Captain Solo, Mon Mothma said, looking at Winter.
Winter hesitated.
It didn't come from him exactly, she said.
Leia frowned at her.
What do you mean, not exactly? Was it from Luke?
A muscle in Winter's cheek twitched.
All I can say is that the source is reliable.
There was a short moment of silence as everyone digested that.
Reliable, Mon Mothma said.
Yes, Winter nodded. Mon Mothma threw a look at Leia.
This council is not accustomed to having information withheld from it, she said. I want to know where these coordinates came from.
I'm sorry, Winter said quietly. It's not my secret to tell.
Whose secret is it?
I can't tell you that either.
Mon Mothma's face darkened.
It doesn't matter, Bel Iblis put in before she could speak. Not for right now. Whether this planet is the actual cloning center or not, there's nothing we can do about it until the Bilbringi operation is over.
Leia looked at him. We're not sending any backup?
Impossible, Sesfan growled, shaking his huge Mon Calamari head. All available ships and personnel are already committed to the Bilbringi attack. Too many regions and systems have been left undefended as it is.
Especially when we don't even know if this is the right place, Drayson added. It could just as easily be an Imperial trap.
It's not a trap, Leia insisted. Mara's not working for the Empire anymore.
We only have your word for that.
It still doesn't matter, Bel Iblis cut him off, his senatorial voice cutting through the growing argument.
Look at the bottom of the map, Leia. It says all indications are that their landing was undetected. Would you really want to risk that element of surprise by sending another ship in after them?
Leia felt her stomach tighten. Unfortunately, he had a point.
Then perhaps the Bilbringi attack should be postponed, Thalia said.
Leia turned to look at him, dimly aware that the whole table was doing likewise. It was practically the first time the Bothan had spoken at a council meeting since his bid for power had ignominiously collapsed out at the Katana fleet.
I'm afraid that's out of the question, Councillor Thalia, Mon Mothma said. Aside from all the preparations that would have to be discarded, it's absolutely imperative that we clear out these cloaked asteroids hanging over our heads.
Why?
Felia demanded, a rippling wave running through the fur of his neck and down his shoulders. The shield protects us. We have adequate supplies for many months. We have full communication with the rest of the New Republic. Is it merely the fear of looking weak and helpless? Appearances and perceptions are important to the New Republic, Mon Mothma reminded him, and properly so. The Empire rules by force and threat. We rule instead by inspiration and leadership. We cannot be perceived to be cowering here in fear of our lives. This is beyond image and perception, Felia insisted, the fur flattening across the back of his head. The Bothan people knew the Emperor, knew his desires and his ambitions, perhaps better than all who were not his allies and servants. There are things in that storehouse which must never again see light, weapons and devices which Thrawn will someday find and use against us unless we prevent him from doing so. And we will do so, Mon Mothma assured him, and soon, but not until we've damaged the Bilbringi shipyards and obtained a CGT array. And what of Captain Solo and Counselor Organa Solo's brother? The lines around Mon Mothma's mouth tightened. For all the rigid military logic, Leia could see that she didn't like abandoning them there either. All we can do for them right now is to continue with our plans, she said quietly, to draw the Grand Admiral's attention toward our supposed attack on Tangreen. She looked at Drayson, which we were about to discuss. Admiral? Drayson stepped up to the display again. We'll start with the current status of preparations for the Tangreen feint, he said, keying his light pointer to call up the proper display. Leia threw a sideways glance at Felia, and at the obvious signs of agitation still visible in the Bothan's face and fur movements. What was in the mountain, she wondered, that he was so afraid Thrawn would get hold of? Perhaps it was just as well she didn't know. Pelion stepped into the dimly lit entry room just outside Thrawn's private command room, his eyes darting around. Rook was here somewhere, waiting to play his little Nogri games. He took a step toward the door to the main chamber, took another. There was a touch of air on the back of his neck. Pelion spun around, hands snapping up in half-remembered Academy self-defense training. There was no one there. He looked around again, searching for where the Nogri might have taken cover. Captain Pelion, the familiar cat-like voice mewed from behind him. He spun back again. Again, no one was there. But even as his eyes searched the walls and non-existent cover, Rook stepped around from behind him. You are expected, the Nogri said, gesturing with his slender assassin's knife toward the main door. Pelion glared at him. Someday, he promised himself darkly, he would persuade Thrawn that a Grand Admiral of the Empire didn't need an arrogant alien bodyguard to protect him. And when that happened, he was going to take a very personal pleasure in having Rook killed. Thank you, he growled, and went in. He'd expected the command room to be filled with Thrawn's usual eclectic collection of alien art, and he was right. But with one minor difference. Even to Pelion's untrained eye, it was clear that two very different styles of art were being represented. They were spread out along opposite sides of the room, with a large tactical holo of the Tangreen system filling the center.
Come in, Captain, Thrawn called from the double display ring as Pelion paused in the doorway. What news from Tangreen?
The rebels are still moving forces into strike positions, Pelion told him, making his way between the sculptures and the tactical holo toward Thrawn's command chair, sneaking their devious way into our trap.
How very convenient of them. Thrawn gestured to his right. Moon calamari art, he identified it. What do you think? Pelion gave it a quick look as he came up to the double display ring. It looked about as repulsive and primitive as the Mon Calamari themselves. Very interesting, he said aloud. Isn't it? Thrawn agreed. Those two pieces in particular, they were created by Admiral Ackbar himself. Pelion eyed the indicated sculptures. I didn't know Ackbar had any interest in art. A minor one only, Thrawn said. These were composed some time ago, before he joined the Rebellion. Still, they provide useful insights into his character, as do those, he added, gesturing to his left. Artwork once chosen personally by our Corellian adversary. Pelion looked at them with new interest. So Senator Bel Iblis had picked these out himself, had he? Where were these from, his old Imperial Senate office? Those were, Thrawn said, indicating the nearest group. Those were from his home, those from his private ship. Intelligence found these records, more or less accidentally, in the data from our last Obroa Sky information raid. So, the rebels continue to edge toward our trap, do they? Yes, sir, Pelion said. Glad to be getting back to something he could understand. We've had two more reports of rebel support ships moving into positions at the edge of the Drakiz system. But not, obviously. Pelion frowned. Excuse me, Admiral. What I mean is that they're being highly secretive about their preparations, Thrawn said thoughtfully. Quietly detaching intelligence and support ships from other assignments, moving and reforming sector fleets to free capital ships for service, that sort of thing. Never, obviously. Always making Imperial intelligence work hard to put the pieces together. He looked up at Pelion, his glowing red eyes glittering in the dim light. Almost as if Tangreen was indeed their true target. Pelion stared at him. Are you saying it isn't? That's correct, Captain, Thrawn said, gazing out at the artwork. Pelion looked at the Tangreen holo. Intelligence had put a 94% probability on this. But if they're not going to hit Tangreen, then where? The last place we would normally expect them, Thrawn said, reaching over to touch a switch on his command board. Tangreen's system vanished, to be replaced by... Pelion felt his jaw drop. Bill Bringy? He wrenched his eyes back to his commander. Sir, that's... insane. Thrawn cocked a blue-black eyebrow. Of course it is. The insanity of men and aliens who've learned the hard way that they can't match me face to face. And so they attempt to use my own tactical skill and insight against me. They pretend to walk into my trap, gambling that I'll notice the subtlety of their movements and interpret that as genuine intent. And while I then congratulate myself on my perception, he gestured at the Bilbringi holo, they prepare their actual attack. Pelion looked at Bel Iblis's old artwork. We might want to wait for confirmation before we shift any forces from Tangreen, Admiral, he suggested cautiously. We could intensify intelligence activity in the Bilbringi region, or perhaps Delta Source could confirm it. Unfortunately, Delta Source has been silenced, Thrawn said. But we have no need of confirmation. This is the rebels' plan, and we will not risk tipping our hand with anything so obvious as a heightened intelligence presence. They believe they've deceived me. Our overriding task now is to make certain they continue to believe that. He smiled grimly. After all, Captain,
It makes no difference whether we crush them at Tangreen or at Bilbringi. No difference whatsoever.
Chapter 21. The lopsided helix shape of the seed pod hovered 1.5 meters in front of Mara, practically daring her to strike it down. She eyed it darkly. Skywalker's lightsaber held ready in an unorthodox but versatile two-handed grip. She'd already missed the pod twice. She didn't intend to do so a third time. Don't rush it, Skywalker cautioned her. Concentrate and let the force flow into you. Try to anticipate the pod's motion. Easy for him to say, she thought sourly. After all, he was the one controlling it. The pod twitched 1 millimeter closer, daring her again. And suddenly she decided she was tired of this game. Reaching out with the force, she got a grip of her own on the pod. Briefly immobilized, it managed a single tremor before she jabbed the lightsaber straight out, stabbing it neatly dead center. There, she said, closing down the weapon. I did it. She'd expected Skywalker to be angry. To her mild surprise, and not so mild annoyance, he wasn't in the least. Good, he said encouragingly. Very good. It's difficult to split your attention between two separate mental and physical activities that way, and you did it well. Thanks, she muttered, tossing the lightsaber away from her toward the bushes. It curved smoothly around in midair as Skywalker pulled it back to land in his outstretched hand. So, is that it? She added. Skywalker looked over his shoulder. Solo and Calrissian were hunched over the protocol droid, which had stopped complaining about Weyland's terrain, vegetation, and animal life, and was instead complaining about what crunching through that stone crust had done to its foot. Skywalker's astromech droid was hovering nearby, with its sensor antenna extended, running through its usual repertoire of encouraging noises. A couple of steps away, the Wookiee was rummaging through one of their packs, probably for some tool or other. I think we've got time for a few more exercises, Skywalker decided, turning back to face her. That technique of yours is very interesting. Obi-Wan never taught me anything about using the tip of the lightsaber blade. The Emperor's philosophy was to use everything you had available, Mara said. Somehow, that doesn't surprise me, Skywalker said dryly. He held out the lightsaber. Let's try something else. Go ahead and take the lightsaber. This book is continued on cassette number 10.